that you will have a wonderful day.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Fire officials say 26 people were killed and at least 85 injured when a passenger train collided with an oncoming freight train in northern Greece early Wednesday. Multiple train cars derailed and at least three caught fire after the crash during the night near Tempe, some 235 miles north of Athens. Hospital officials said 25 people had seriously been injured. Ambulances arrived from several towns to help transport injured passengers. Explosions rang out and fires raged on Tuesday as Russian forces pressed forward with their weeks-long drive to encircle and capture the eastern Ukrainian city of Bakhmut, a prize coveted by Russia. But Ukrainian forces insisted they would not withdraw. Reuters correspondent Tamara Lindstrom reports.
Ukraine's military said Russia was shelling settlements around Bakhmut, which had a pre-war population of about 70,000, but now lies in ruins after months of intense trench warfare. Despite the violent firefights echoing in the streets, some citizens remain.
As long as my home is intact, as long as I am not hurt, I will stay here.
While the city of Bakhmut hangs in the balance, a senior Pentagon official said Tuesday the U.S. does not expect Russia to make significant territorial gains in the near term, describing the front lines in the year-long war as a grinding slog.
Reuters correspondent Tamara Lindstrom. The U.S. Defense Department Inspector General says his office has found no evidence yet that any of the billions of dollars in weapons and aid to Ukraine has been lost to corruption or diverted into the wrong hands. Robert P. Strach testified before the U.S. House Armed Services Committee on Tuesday. Find more on our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Relatives of victims of a migrant boat that broke up in the stormy seas off southern Italy on Tuesday identified and mourned the dead, at least 65 people, including more than a dozen children. Reuters correspondent Olivia Chan reports.
Hey, somebody, oh.
Okay.
two daughters.
Alan has just identified the bodies of his loved ones in the Italian city of Crotone on Tuesday. His aunt was found dead along with three of her children after a migrant boat broke up in stormy seas. The search for victims continued around the nearby beach of Staccato di Cutro, where the wooden vessel sank after hitting rocks early on Sunday. Police have said that patrol boats were sent to intercept the migrants, but severe weather forced them to return to port.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Chan. Mexico's president says Tesla has committed to building a plant in the industrial hub of Monterrey in northern Mexico, AP's Julia Walker reports.
President Andres Manuel López Obrador said the promise came in phone calls he had Friday and Monday with Tesla head Elon Musk. It would be Tesla's third plant outside the U.S. after Shanghai and one near Berlin. López Obrador had previously ruled out such a plant in the arid northern state of Nuevo León because he didn't want water-hungry factories in a region that suffers water shortages. But he said Musk's company had offered commitments to address those concerns, including using recycled water. I'm Julie Walker.
The computer system at the U.S. Marshals Service was hit by a ransomware attack, the AP's Ed Donahue reports.
A spokesman says hackers stole sensitive and personally identifiable data less than 2 weeks ago about agency employees and targets of investigations. The hacked system was disconnected shortly after the breach was discovered. Ransomware attacks have crippled everything from Britain's postal service to Ireland's national health network to Costa Rica's government. Schools, hospitals, and local governments are routinely targeted. Criminals can hold data hostage, even if the target quickly restores the affected network with backup data. The Marshal Service tracks down fugitives, transports federal prisoners, protects witnesses, and provides court security. Ed Donahue, Washington.
1 in 10 early deaths could be prevented if everyone engaged in a small amount of daily exercise, such as a brisk 11-minute walk, a large study said on Wednesday. Physical activity is known to reduce the risk of heart disease, cancer, and other leading causes of death, but exactly how much is needed to have an impact has been unclear. An international team of researchers pulled together the results of 196 previous studies, which included more than 30 million people, to create one of the largest reviews conducted on the subject. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today is Wednesday, March 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Nwofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. pledges more high-tech weaponry for Ukraine as it prepares for its spring offensive.
The security assistance package reaffirms the steadfast support of the United States for Ukraine by committing additional unmanned aerial systems and counter-UAS and electronic warfare detection equipment.
Nigeria's disputed election heads to a result as criticisms grow.
Provisional results from around two-thirds of Nigeria's states suggest ruling party candidate Bola Tinubu is leading the country's disputed presidential election.
And a train crash in Greece kills at least 26 people. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The U.S. has announced $2 billion in more weaponry for Ukraine as it prepares for a spring offensive. This as the administration added new sanctions against Russia and its allies, new export controls and tariffs aimed at undermining Moscow's ability to wage war. The additional military aid did not include F-16 fighter jets that Ukraine has requested, but does include more ammunition for the high-mobility artillery rocket systems, or HIMARS, and a number of different types of drones, including Switchblades and the Cyberlux K-8. Pentagon Press Secretary Air Force Brigadier General Patrick Ryder detailed the content of the package at a press briefing.
In another demonstration of our enduring commitment, earlier today, the Department of Defense announced $2 billion in additional security assistance for Ukraine under the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative. The security assistance package reaffirms the steadfast support of the United States for Ukraine by committing additional unmanned aerial systems and counter-UAS and electronic warfare detection equipment, as well as critical ammunition stocks for artillery and precision fires capabilities that will bolster Ukraine's ability to repel Russian aggression. We're already providing them with a significant amount of capabilities coming from PDA along with the international community to get them the capabilities they need for the springtime. But again, this is a fight that will continue to be tough. And so we want to ensure not only are we meeting their immediate needs, but we're also meeting their medium and long-term needs. And so again, we're going to rush to get these capabilities there as quickly as we can. In the package, as you highlight, the laser-guided rocket systems, those are advanced precision kill weapon systems. So essentially, the ability to convert unguided rockets into precision-guided munitions, which can be operated from various launchers that we're providing to the Ukrainians. So the equipment plus the training, which includes operations, maintenance, and sustainment, gives the Ukrainians the capabilities they need not only to defend, but also to go on the offensive on their timeline in order to change the equation on the battlefield.
That's Pentagon Press Secretary Air Force Brigadier General Patrick Ryder. The Ukrainian military official described the situation around the city of Bakhmut as, quote, extremely tense, unquote. Tuesday is highlighting an area that has been subject to heavy fighting between Ukrainian and Russian forces in Ukraine's Donetsk province. Flashpoint Ukraine's Laurie London speaks with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
Very heavy fightings, very heavy hostilities continue in the east part of the country, at the east front line, and particularly around the city of Bakhmut, but also heavy shelling happening in general, a lot of heavy shelling happening in different areas of the Donetsk region. And Ukrainian general staff confirmed that Russian forces intensify the shelling, intensify their actions in that area, and also increase their presence in that area. So general staff of Ukraine reported that there are more Russian manpower coming to that area and concentrated in that area. So, and as we already discussed previously, and as was already reported by the head of Ukrainian military defense, Mr. Budanov, and also by Ukrainian military officials, that basically this new big assault by Russian forces has already begun, and it's already happening in the east part of the country, in the east front lines.
The new offensive didn't fully kick in when it was expected to?
Actually, yes. In terms of the massive shelling, Ukrainians expected another massive shelling on the 23rd and 24th of February, marking 1 year anniversary of the full-scale invasion, but it didn't happen. However, today, the representation of the south area of the Ministry of Defense confirmed that they can report on the increase of Russian actions in the Black Sea, particularly that they can see at least five rocket launchers in the sea, and this including two under the water. And general amount of possible caliber missiles that these rocket launchers could have on board could reach up to 32 missiles. And actually, just now, as we're talking, air raid siren is on in Kyiv, and it might be that it's not only in Kyiv. So basically, this information is another sign for possible massive shelling that actually might still happen. So everyone is on the alert.
That's reporter Anna Chernikova speaking with Flightpoint Ukraine's Larry London. 1 year after the beginning of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine and a cascade of international sanctions against Russia, the country's economy is feeling the impact, although its effect has not been as fast and effective as Western powers had hoped. Marcus Hartung renders this report from VOA's Moscow Bureau.
Walking on Moscow streets, one may think that this is not the capital of a country at war. In stores, we can find American-designed next-generation phones, albeit at prices 30% more expensive than in the West. There are no visible shortages, and Russia can thank the traditional allies who have helped it dodge sanctions. Businessman Dmitry Potapenko. He says there are four countries that continue to sell to Russia, whether legally or not. Iran, China, Turkey, and India. But the sanctions have succeeded in hitting entire sectors, such as Russia's automobile industry, whose sales domestically have fallen 80%. The Russian civil aviation sector has also taken a hit, cut off from virtually all international routes. Perhaps more importantly, Russian airlines find it almost impossible to get spare parts. Russia's government has intervened with a so-called parallel imports program to prevent shortages by allowing Russian companies to more freely buy products from suppliers via third countries. Natalia Zubarovich is an economic analyst. She says consumers now have worse products, more expensive, and with fewer supplies, but they have them. This policy has ensured that basic necessities are not lacking, which on the street translates into a feeling, real or not, of normality. Muscovites we interviewed told us they notice little, if anything, has changed. She says the situation has not changed. Perhaps it is more difficult to find some imported items, but nothing important. We have everything. He says, I think nothing has changed. We have already been under sanctions on other occasions. We are living this period calmly. He says, at the moment, the sanctions are not noticeable, at least not here in Moscow. But I think they will begin to be noticed from this summer. It has been a year since the start of the full-scale war, and the citizens of Moscow who spoke to us appeared not to be overly concerned. For the VOA Moscow Bureau, Marcus Hartung, VOA News.
Thank you, Marcus. And the UN Refugee Agency is appealing for $137 million to assist 3.3 million refugees internally displaced and host communities in the Horn of Africa. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
6 years of drought in the Horn of Africa have turned fertile fields into barren dry lands, killed thousands of livestock, and forced millions of people to leave their homes in search of food. The World Food Program estimates 22 million people face acute hunger across the Horn of Africa, around 8.3 million of them in Somalia. The spokeswoman for the UN Refugee Agency, Olga Sarado, says more than 322,000 are on the verge of famine.
Famine has so far been averted in Somalia, mostly due to stepped-up humanitarian response. People continue to battle life-threatening food and water shortages resulting from massive losses of harvests, livestock, and income. Local commodity prices also remain at an all-time high, out of reach for many.
She says the confluence of climate and conflict in the region is worsening an already dire humanitarian situation. UNHCR data show more than 1.7 million people are internally displaced in Ethiopia and Somalia due to drought, and more than 180,000 refugees from Somalia and South Sudan have crossed into drought-affected areas of Kenya and Ethiopia. Serrato says aid for people fleeing this climate catastrophe is scant. Kenya's Dadaab camps are full, and she says newly arriving refugees are forced to live in the outskirts, deprived of what little assistance there is. She says people displaced by conflict and drought urgently need help to survive. She also says protection must be stepped up for women and children, who make up around 80% of the displaced and are most at risk of exploitation and violence.
Both women and children, they have to trek long distances to access water and shelter, and they are most of the time arriving on their own, and this, of course, increases the exposure to gender-based violence. And also, we know that many children have been forced to drop to school to help their families earn income.
Serrato says money from the appeal will provide shelter, water and sanitation systems, health care and nutritional assistance for women and children. Cash assistance will be prioritized for the most vulnerable, which Serrato notes will allow them to supplement their food needs. That, in turn, will encourage traders to make food and other necessities available. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, a passenger train carrying hundreds of people collided with an oncoming freight train in a fiery wreck in northern Greece early Wednesday, killing 26 and injuring at least 85, officials said. Multiple cars derailed and at least three burst into flames after the collision near the town of Tembe, a small next town to a valley where the major highway and rail tunnels are located, and that's some 380 kilometers north of Athens. Hospital officials in the nearby city of Larissa said at least 25 people had serious injuries. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. By Tuesday, results in about two-thirds of Nigerian states have been announced, but opposition parties and observer missions have been criticizing the election process. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
Provisional results from around two-thirds of Nigeria's states suggest ruling party candidate Bola Tinubu is leading the country's disputed presidential election. As of Tuesday morning, the APC's Tinubu had about 36% of valid votes counted. The main opposition PDP party's Atiku Abubakar was on 30%. Outside challenger Peter Obi from the smaller Labour Party was on 20%. More results were expected to show the winner later on Tuesday. But this election has been marred by logistical and technological difficulties. That's resulted in a failure in many places to upload results directly from each polling unit to the Electoral Commission's website. That was a promise it had made to guarantee transparency. The Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, has said it takes full responsibility for the problems and regrets the distress caused. Observer missions have criticised the failings. The European Union's mission said trust in the process had been reduced, and here's Ernest Karoma, Chief Mission Observer for the Economic Community of West African States.
Late arrival of polling officials, voting materials, and in some cases, the delivery of wrong materials at polling stations across the country.
Opposition parties have also been scathing, with some walking out of the counting process on Monday, citing concerns over fraud. Rigged is how the campaign manager for Atiku's PDP described the situation. Obi's campaign manager said they had lost confidence in the results being collated and announced, as he called on INEC to follow its own guidelines or cancel the entire election.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. And French President Emmanuel Macron heads to Central Africa Wednesday on a four-nation visit. On Monday, he announced a revamped relationship with Africa amid an increase in anti-French sentiments in some places and rising Russian and Chinese influence. From Paris, Lisa Bryan has more on Macron's Africa visit and reactions to his proposals.
Au fond, la logique, c'est que notre modèle ne doit plus être celui de bases militaires telles qu'elles existent aujourd'hui. Partnership, humility, and reorganization are part of President Macron's lexicon this week with his new recalibrated strategy for Africa. He said French military bases in Africa would be reorganized, with some becoming military academies or run in collaboration with African and European partners, based on goals defined by African hosts.
La réorganisation que j'évoquais tout à l'heure.
He said France will conduct more training, supply more equipment, and work more closely with local troops according to their needs.
Pour éviter la répétition de l'histoire,
Macron also said France must show a profound humility and carve out a new, balanced and mutually responsible relationship with African nations. Macron's revamped Africa strategy will be put to the test this week as he heads first to Gabon on Wednesday for a summit on forests. He then goes to visit Angola, the Republic of Congo, and the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. Only two countries on his list, Gabon and the Republic of Congo, are former French colonies. His Africa visit follows setbacks for France, especially in the Sahel region, as a partnership to fight an Islamist insurgency unravels. France has ended military operations in Mali and Burkina Faso amid deteriorating relationships with the military power holders and rising anti-French sentiment. Paris is also feeling pressure from other foreign powers on the continent. That includes the private Russian military group Wagner, present in places like Mali and the Central African Republic, where it is accused of committing human rights violations.
Pour ce qui est de Wagner,
Macron derided Wagner as a so-called life insurance policy for failed regimes and putschists. His government accuses Russia of spreading anti-French disinformation.
The past 10, 15 years, every French president comes to power with the idea of sort of reforming the relationship with Africa, sort of moving beyond the old legacy of post-colonial relations.
Martin Kenzis is the Paris office director for the German Marshall Fund. He spoke to VOA before Macron's speech. He says every recent reset effort has failed. Shortly after becoming president in 2017, Macron called for turning a new page in French-African relations at a meeting with university students in Ouagadougou, the capital of Burkina Faso. It didn't happen the way he planned, at least not in Burkina Faso.
Macron right now is in a position where clearly France has lost influence in a region where we have invested a lot of money and military capacity in the region. The results are quite limited, to say the least.
It's not clear how Macron's latest recalibration effort will fare. Some Africans interviewed by French media said they heard nothing new in Macron's speech, but others were more receptive. Speaking to France's TV5 Monde, Aliou Tine, founder of Dakar-based research group the Africa Jam Center, noted Macron was addressing not just African allies, but countries like Mali, where France has problems. He said it was good the French president was trying to improve ties, but that it takes two to do so. Separately, Macron's push to return African artifacts taken during colonial times has also drawn praise, and objects have been returned to Benin and Senegal. He announced draft legislation to return objects to more African countries. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news. Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week for the 5-Minute VOA Newscast. We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe. Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday, join us as we put the latest developments into a global context with stories, interviews, and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
Hi,
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and a panel of Washington journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the Supreme Court taking up two challenges concerning President Biden's student loan forgiveness program, with a decision expected by late June or early July. The initiative aimed to provide targeted debt relief to millions of student loan borrowers, but has so far been stalled by legal challenges. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Protests have been growing inside and outside Iran, initially sparked by the death and police custody of Mahsa Amini, a young woman arrested by Iran's morality police for not having her hair fully covered. Each Wednesday, go beyond the breaking news with VOA's Flashpoint Iran. Listen online at voanews.com or in your podcast player.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chin Edwafo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and the Philippines will conduct their annual joint military exercises, known as Balikatan, in the second quarter of this year. Balikatan means shoulder to shoulder, and Commanding General of the Philippine Army, Romeo Browner, recently announced that this year would involve the largest joint drills since 2015. The exercises will take place against the backdrop of intensified aggressive moves by the People's Republic of China. The latest occurred earlier this month, when the PRC Coast Guard allegedly used laser devices against the crew of a Philippine Coast Guard ship in the South China Sea. The ship was a Philippine patrol vessel on a resupply mission to Filipino forces. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said in a statement, "The PRC's conduct was provocative and unsafe, resulting in the temporary blindness of the crew members of the BRP Malapasua and interfering with the Philippines' lawful operations in and around Second Thomas Shoal." More broadly, the PRC's dangerous operational behavior directly threatens regional peace and stability, infringes upon freedom of navigation in the South China Sea as guaranteed under international law, and undermines the rules-based international order. The PRC continues to make vast territorial claims to the South China Sea, despite a legally binding decision by an international tribunal in 2016 that such claims have no basis in international law. After the latest incident, Defense Department spokesperson General Patrick Ryder tweeted, "The PRC's actions stand in direct opposition to the United States, the Philippines, and like-minded nations' commitment to sovereignty and international law, including the 2016 arbitral tribunal ruling, which unequivocally rejects PRC claims to Second Thomas Shoal." State Department spokesperson Price emphasized that the United States stands with their Philippine allies and warned that an armed attack on Philippine armed forces, public vessels, or aircraft, including those of the Coast Guard in the South China Sea, would invoke U.S. mutual defense commitments under Article 4 of the 1951 U.S.-Philippines Mutual Defense Treaty. Pentagon spokesman General Ryder tweeted, "The department will redouble its efforts with our Philippine ally to bolster the defense capabilities of the armed forces of the Philippines and the Philippine Coast Guard as we work shoulder to shoulder to uphold the rules-based international order."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.